DW.
Well, it's been a tumultuous year so far in US politics, particularly when it comes to the environment. Since taking office, US President Donald Trump has appointed several fossil fuel proponents as government officials. His proposed federal budget seeks to slash funding to climate research. And last week, the president signed an executive order that seeks to undermine climate change policies.
We've already eliminated a devastating anti-coal regulation, but that was just the beginning. Today, I'm taking bold action to follow through on that promise. My administration is putting an end to the war on coal. Going to have clean coal, really clean coal. With today's executive action, I am taking historic steps to lift the restrictions on American energy, to reverse government intrusion, and to cancel job-killing regulations.
The executive order paves the way for Trump to dismantle Obama's Clean Power Plan, which required states to collectively cut their carbon emissions by 32%, below 2005 levels by 2030. Not surprisingly, the move has been met with fierce opposition from climate scientists and environmentalists. One vocal critic is American author and activist Bill McKibben. Bill is co-founder of the climate campaign group 350.org and has written extensively on the impacts of climate change. I reached Bill McKibben by phone in the United States. I wonder if you could just start off by explaining why climate change is one of the biggest issues facing the world today and just remind us all of what's really at stake here.
Climate change is beyond any doubt the biggest thing that human beings have ever done. We have one planet to live on, and we're managing to break it, and in short order. By that, I mean that the last 3 years have been the hottest we've ever recorded, and that's been enough to dramatically accelerate the melt of ice in the Arctic, where there's now less than half the ice that there was 30 years ago. It's been enough this past year to severely degrade and destroy huge parts of the Great Barrier Reef, which is the biggest living structure on Earth. It's enough that the hydrological cycles, the way that water moves around the planet, have been dramatically altered in place after place after place, because hot air holds more water vapor than cold, and hence we're getting more drought and more flood. So these changes are painful, dramatic, and still in their early stages. So far, humans have only raised the temperature of the planet about 1 degree Celsius, and that's been enough to melt all that ice. We're on a path at the moment to raise that temperature as much as 3.5 or 4 degrees Celsius. If we do that, we will not be able to have civilizations like the ones we're used to having.
Well, Bill, since we last spoke, Donald Trump has become U.S. president. Recently, he signed an executive order that paves the way to dismantle Obama-era climate regulations. What are the implications of this executive order?
Well, I think that the biggest implications, at least in the short run, are probably psychological. The United States has clearly announced that it's removing itself from the leadership in the fight against climate change. It had never been an enormously great leader, but it was about as good as there was on the international stage, at least aside from Europe. But with the U.S., historically the biggest carbon emitter, no longer in the game, there's going to be a slackening of whatever momentum developed post-Paris climate accords. I think it could not have come at a worse time. Perhaps others, like the Chinese, will pick up some of that slack and move forward. But this really is a global problem, and it really is a problem where time is the most important variable. That means that Donald Trump pulling the U.S. out of this process for a few years will have grave, grave implications, probably measured in geologic time.
And when he signed the executive order, Trump said he was putting an end to the war on coal and has promised a future of clean coal. Is there even such a thing as clean coal, and is there a future for it?
No, there's in global warming terms, there's no such thing as clean coal. When you burn it, you release vast clouds of carbon into the atmosphere. People have talked about figuring out some way to burn it and suck up all the carbon dioxide and pump it underground. But if you do that, the whole thing's so absurdly expensive that you're far better off just building the windmill in the first place. The only reason we even talk about it is because of the political power of coal operators, but that power is diminishing. They've automated the mines that they have so thoroughly that they employ very few people. There are twice as many people in America who work in car washes as work in coal mines. So the idea that somehow this is a crucial occupation, that we somehow must protect at any cost, is absurd. There are far, far more people already putting up solar panels than digging coal.
And less than 100 days in office, Trump has made plans to cut funding to climate research and the EPA and made orders that could undo all sorts of climate policies and regulations. What is the big picture here? What is Trump's agenda in the long term? And what further changes do you expect from him on the environmental front in the coming years?
The big picture is that he's a lying creep who's in way over his head as president of the United States. He has no more idea about climate change and environmental policy than he does about, you know, how to flap his wings and fly to the moon. That means that environmental policy has largely been subcontracted to the right-wing Republicans, people like the Koch brothers, who've been waiting for years to try and end environmental regulation because it gets in the way of some of their profits. They're now in the driver's seat, and they're getting all that they want from people like his EPA appointee, Scott Pruitt. But that also means, of course, that their fingerprints are all over what's going on. And as it backfires, as the planet heats, one hopes that they'll fall into disrepute soon enough that we can begin to recover from this damage with realistic and adult policies in the not-so-distant future.
There are some significant days of action coming up in April. First, on April 22nd, Earth Day, there's the March for Science. And 1 week later, on April 29th, there's the People's Climate March, marking 100 days of the Trump administration. Have these events taken on added meaning?
I think they've taken on different meaning. The plan, I think, was to go march, no matter who was president, at the end of April. But if it had been Hillary Clinton, it would have been an effort to get her to do the things that she'd promised to do. In the case of Trump, it's part of this large resistance that's been forming around so many issues, and a real reminder that people will not idly sit by and let their future be completely compromised. So it'll have a very different flavor than I think we thought it would 6 or 8 months ago.
And do you think proposed budget cuts to scientific work and the changes at the Environmental Protection Agency will mobilize more scientists and get them involved in politics?
Yes, I think scientists are becoming more politically engaged. I think they're beginning to understand that they have no choice. It's not an ideal situation. I mean, in a rational world, we'd let scientists do their work, and then when they offer explicit warnings, as they did 20 years ago around climate change, the rest of our political system would go to work acting on those warnings. But as we've all learned, that's not necessarily what happens, that power and money and influence can get in the way. And that's, I think, why scientists are now mobilizing.
You've been also heavily involved in protests against the Dakota and Keystone pipelines for the past several years. What are you planning to do now that the Keystone has been formally approved by the government?
Well, the Keystone Pipeline's been formally approved by the State Department and the White House, but it's got some hoops to jump through yet, most of them in the states like Nebraska, where there's not even a route approved for this thing and where there is a lot of organizing and anger underway. It also has some financial hoops to jump through. It's not as if the price of oil is doing any favors to people in the tar sands where that pipeline begins. So I don't think we've seen the end of that story yet.
And finally, Trump's climate position does have many implications. Where do you predict the biggest resistance will come from?
I think that you're seeing resistance from smart scientists and from people on frontline communities who deal with the effects of climate change already. And I think the thing he needs most to fear is just the awakening of all those normal people in the middle who don't normally think that much about politics, but know enough about the future to know that what we're doing is not safe and not smart and putting their children at risk. And that's a potent force once awakened.
When we spoke last year, you weren't particularly optimistic about our future, and a lot has happened since then. Would you say you're more or less optimistic?
I think it's very hard to be optimistic at the moment, except that there's a spirited resistance to Trump arising. And it's powerful to see that. We'll all be marching in Washington at the end of April, just as we marched in January after the inauguration and during the fights over immigration. And, you know, it's not as if Trump is a popular president, so at least that's some demonstration that there's some residual common sense left in the American body politic.
DW.